All right, well, good morning to you. On a great morning. Why? Because Eagles won the Super Bowl less than 2 weeks ago. That's why. That's exactly why.
That is exactly why.
Certainly not because of the weather.
No.
It's freaking chilly out there right now. All right, so great to be with you on this Thursday morning. We move closer to the month of March. College basketball will heat up that month, and it's a shame the Sixers really aren't giving us anything. Flyers pretty much never give us anything, but the Phillies and the Eagles obviously have a lot going on. Ruben Amaro will be with us all through the Philly season, like he was all through the Eagles season, like he will be all through the Sixers season. Unfortunately, we don't really get there much. Rube, good morning to you, pal.
Good morning.
So, Rube, there's so much to get into with you.
I haven't talked to you guys since the Super Bowl.
All right. How about the Birds?
Unbelievable.
That's how you do.
That is how you go.
All right, so Rube, congrats to you as a Philadelphian.
Dude, whole deal. So emotionally invested. Yeah. So invested. And it was, I remember, it was at Taco's house watching the game.
That's
and
his
I,
brother, for those who don't know. Rube's brother.
And we all our whole family, pretty much our whole family, and some a couple of friends. But
thanks for the invite, but go ahead.
Never, yeah, you're out.
Like you needed more of an issue trying to figure out what to do.
He had no idea. He had put himself in three spots. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is that I was shocked and stunned about how they dominated the game.
I was too.
Shocked and stunned. And they dominated, they literally dominated the game, and they dominated the week before, or 2 weeks before.
That's right.
To me, it's one of the best, I think, professional teams they've ever had here in Philadelphia history.
I agree with that.
Talent-wise.
Yeah. I agree.
And like the whole package, like the coaching and the front office, I mean, no disrespect to any of the other teams, including the Phillies.
Sure.
I will tell you that's one of the best organizational wins of all time.
I agree with that.
Here in Philadelphia.
I agree with that entirely.
And then you do a parade to celebrate the win, and they can't keep the guys on the buses.
That was neat.
You know what? That is so beyond amazing. They can't, like, they arrived, I don't know how late it was that they arrived late at the museum, because the players wanted to be out there and just interacting, touching, hugging, just being with.
Lifting children.
Fans. Lifting them up.
Celebrating the fans.
Think about that. This is an unbelievable symbiotic relationship that exists here, and man, it doesn't have to be a one-time thing.
It's something very, very special about Philadelphia fans, is that you can build that symbiosis, as you talked about. The Phillies have had that over the last few years. Now they're a little upset about the fact that they got knocked out of, you know, the playoffs so early last year, and you know, a little doubt there, but the reality of it is they built that. I mean, think about what happened in 2022.
I agree.
With the Phillies. I mean, and, you know, the Red Octobers and all those. I mean, you can build, you know, you start loving the personality of the players. You start, there's a love both ways, because I think the players also understand that when you win, the fans are with you, man. They're with you, and there's nothing like it. And you see it being seen across the board now. Yeah. There's nothing like a Philadelphia fan.
And not just with you, but can help create an advantage. Which obviously both home bases have done.
Advantage until it's a disadvantage with Alec Bohm, for example.
Well, it can get tight. Look, we all know we've either been in the stadium or have seen on TV. It can get tight in Citizens Bank Park when the season is near the end and the team isn't playing well, and it gets tight.
And it's Alec
all about
Bohm,
how, but it's all about how you respond. Like in.
Did he get better at responding?
I think. Well, he got better at responding in the first issue that he had
when he
basically jumped on the fans, and you know, then he owned it and went forward, and the
but
fans.
But then last year we couldn't depend on him when we needed him.
Right.
But again, he came into spring training, talked to a lot of the guys. He's got a great attitude right now, and I think it's all about a learning experience. Everybody's developing and learning. I mean, he's not young anymore necessarily, but it doesn't mean you can't learn and you can't be better through the experience.
I agree with that. All right, Rube, let me ask you this, and we'll get back to the phone shortly here. So there's a million reasons we love having you in here, but one of them obviously is the experience that you had as an assistant GM and a GM. And I mean this with all due respect, in both good and bad times.
Yeah.
So because it's fascinating to tap into your experience and expertise. The Eagles are going to try to do what your group didn't do, which is win a second two in a row.
Came so close, man.
Came very close. Sixers in 1983, of course, win it all. In 84, lose in the first round. Sixers losing the first round in 84. All right. The Eagles in 2017 thankfully won a playoff game the next year, but it was a weird year, the whole deal. All right.
Here's the Alshon drop. Yeah.
Here's the question. If you were giving recommendations to Howie Roseman and Nick Sirianni for how to be the first team since the 70 Flyers, you know, to go back to back, what are the challenges they are facing and what are the recommendations you would give of how to maximize your chance to win it all again?
Well, they've already set the tone as far as the culture and obviously the talent on the team. Now, they've got some decisions to make, obviously, with the, you know, with some of the free agents and how are they going to work around that. Yeah. But not to be afraid of change. I don't think Howie is. There's got to be some change and not to be afraid of it. I think that they probably learned from the coordinator situation over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I think that they were probably better prepared to lose coordinators, and I think that Howie, having now promoted Petula, I think that they're in a situation where they feel a lot better about where they're headed, and I think personnel wise, obviously, but really it's about continuing that culture, not changing the whole idea of pulling on the same side of the rope. That's the thing that that I think set themselves apart and continuing to try to get better every single day. I think that mantra is the most important one there is, because if the focus stays the same, not necessarily about repeating, but winning that next game every single day, or focusing on that next, or figuring out a way to get better.
The process,
game,
keep the process
stay
the same
with your process. Yeah. And if they do that, then you got to let the chips fall where they may. You can't. There's going to be a target on this team.
Yes, there will be.
There's going to be a bullseye like no other, and they're going to be scouted, and they're going to be, all types of things that are going to be associated with this. I think it's really important for them to continue their process, and I think that they will. And just having watched Sirianni do his thing and lead, I think that's what you're going to get.
Well, I'll say this: almost every player this year played like really well. For the most part, a lot of players played well. 09, obviously, the two guys that I think held you back, and it is what it is. They were two of your major stars in 08, Cole and Brad Lidge. They both took a big step back.
They sure did.
And if players take a step back, then it's hard to repeat
or get injured, because Lidge that injured. Was like injury. Injured. We believe probably. Injury influenced.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, probably. And so anyway, it's. All right, so the challenge is great, but it's great to have the challenge because it means you got a shot for two in a row, and the Eagles certainly do. All right, good morning to you. Jetta Cameron, John Ritchie. Sheil Kapadia will join us in the next couple minutes. So we still need to figure out what day is going to be the Hurts hammer day?
Hammer the hammer on Hurts. There it is.
Something like that, yeah. Sometime next week. We'll figure out a day. I would imagine maybe around midweek next week.
Yeah, I was thinking Wednesday maybe, something
about,
like that. Yeah.
Thereabout. We'll figure out what's going on in the sports
just
calendar.
Just enough time for everyone to, plan their, get their quills filled, so to speak,
Quills filled.
Get it all ready. Shoot some arrows your way.
That's going to be an all-timer here, man.
What is quills like?
Like for
pen?
Arrows? No, I was thinking for like arrows, like pull their arrows out and shoot bows and arrows at them.
Oh, man. Oh. That kind of quill.
I don't like
that. Wait, is that, what is that? What is the thing on the back?
I think it's called a quill, isn't
is it?
I think so.
I think so,
the
too.
The arrow pouch. Like, you're right. Is it a...
I think so. I think so.
Oh, there's a name.
Well, anyway.
Quiver. It's a quiver.
It might
a
be quiver.
Not
yeah.
a quill.
Quiver.
A quiver.
Quiver.
Okay. Quiver.
Okay.
Quiver.
Now I feel better.
So, point is, I'll be under the microscope and dealing with a lot of stuff that day. We'll
That'll be interesting to watch.
That will be.
Enjoy.
All right, let's go to the phone.
Do you feel like you're changing? Do you feel like you've actually turned over a new leaf?
I'll address things next week.
I'll
address things next week.
We'll
have
talk
about a tease.
Or maybe I feel it all for a whole day, and then I tell you the next day what I really think.
Oh, great. That'll go well.
But I'll say this right now. I gave a little tease. He's better than I thought he was, and I've told you that.
About
that's true.
It. That's, about it. Yeah. That was a big takes yeah. a big man.
Is
to
he
say
as good
that.
As James thinks he is, where James says Hurts is one of the two best athletes
yes.
in Philadelphia?
Yes.
Of course not.
And two best quarterbacks in football.
That's ridiculous. But anyway, I'll tell you next week what I think. But I'll have my day where I take my medicine. I mean, I deserve to take medicine in that I did underestimate him. That is true. And we'll have a day next week where people whack away. All right.
I can't wait.
Let's go to the phones. She'll with us shortly. Rick in Easton right now. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, everybody. I totally agree with Seltzer's lineup yesterday. I've been saying it since the Phillies lost, with everybody's coming back when they lost to the Mets. You got to go. You got to. Ruben, you're there. You win games with Schwarber. I get it. You know, you said it too, Joe. You can't take Schwarber out of the leadoff spot. I think you absolutely have to. He protects everybody else around him. And look what the Eagles did with their changes. You got to change to win in the playoffs. And, Ruben, don't you think these better pitching staffs have learned how to pitch around Schwarber in the leadoff spot, which then closes down the rest of that lineup? You have to have Schwarber. You have to try it, at least, to see what happens when the season starts.
Rick, I think you're looking at it wrong.
I don't think so.
Well, let me say this. So I would still bat Schwarber leadoff, but to me, the most important player on the Phillies this season is going to be Trey Turner. Whether
Absolutely.
He hits 1, 2, 8. 15, 6, whatever, he's got to play better. And I don't think he just plays better because you say, okay, now he's my leadoff old guy. Like, Trey Turner's got to get his act together. And I do believe in Schwarber as a leadoff hitter, and I don't believe in Trey Turner right now in year 3 of a massive contract. That's up to him. And it's not about where he hits or where Schwarber hits. It's about Trey Turner getting closer to Dodger and National guy than Philly guy.
Joe, sometimes change is good. You got to give it a shot because they're not winning the ring without
But my point, Rick, is they didn't not win because Schwarber let off. They didn't win because in the playoffs, Turner, JT, Hoffman, Strom, Nola, all of them let them down.
That's why they lost. I agree with that, but you know what? I think Turner protected that injury. It was his first time he's been out for 6-7 weeks, and he didn't run. He's got to get on base and run,
well, yeah.
And I think you got a better lineup.
Okay, Rick, give me an answer, my man. Notable replacement, good or bad, what do you got?
Who replaced Bledsoe at quarterback?
Wow.
Brady.
Brady's a big answer.
Wow.
All right,
yeah,
so
that's a big one.
Sheil in a moment, but Rube, your quick thoughts on, because we're also getting into who should lead off. I would stick with Schwarber. A lot of people want Trey. What's your mindset?
Well, mindset is an improved Bryson Stott, because I think it sets it up left, right, in a way that's pretty special. And if you want to go back-to-back with Schwarber and Harper, I feel that Bryson Stott can be that guy.
I really like him
in one hole. So I like Trey Turner in 2, and I like Bryce Harper in 3. And if you want to go back-to-back with Schwarber in 4 and not move Castellanos into the 4th spot because you want to have Schwarber get as many at-bats and reps as possible, then go ahead and do that. But I feel like that, to me, feels like the most potent lineup. Now, I'm okay with Trey Turner hitting in one hole. But he's got to turn it loose, and he can't be afraid and or reluctant to run in front of Harper, because that's one of the issues I think that they've had.
No question.
Is that they don't feel like Harper's protected enough such that if Trey's on second base, they may not pitch to Harper. And that's one of the biggest issues, is the protection of Harper, and I think that's why you're going to have Schwarber hitting behind him.
So. Okay. Trey as your number 2. What about Bohm batting 2? Would you consider that?
I mean, that's a possibility. He has the ability to hit the ball the other way, uses the entire field. That's okay. That's fine. But you have to have some depth in your lineup. And I feel like having Bohm back there in the 5-6, hole, I think that gives them a lot more length that way, and gives them. I love Bohm. I think he's a really good hitter. He obviously had some issues at the end of the year, whether it's the hand or the attitude or what have you. But but that's one of the beauties of this team, is that, these are decisions that every manager would love to have, and sometimes people get lose sight of this. This is a really deep lineup, especially when they're healthy. It's a really, really good lineup.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. All right, let's talk some football, Eagles football, with Sheil Kapadia. Of course, he joins us typically on Wednesdays during the season, but moved to Thursday today. And, there's a lot going on with the Birds. Free agency in the combine soon, but a big decision they made yesterday with Kevin Petula as the new offensive coordinator. Sheil, of course, does work for The Ringer. Great work, and you can follow him at Sheil Kapadia on Twitter. Good morning, Sheil.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, buddy.
Super.
All right, so, Shield, let's start with this Petula guy. What can you tell us in the audience about what you know about him, what he's done, and whether you think it's the right hire or not?
Yeah, I think he's obviously Nick Sirianni's right-hand man, and that's been the case since Nick Sirianni was hired by the Eagles four seasons ago. So to me, the most interesting part about this is that Nick Sirianni has some of the juice back. You know, last year at this time, he's being handed his coordinators on both sides of the ball. Obviously, that works out great. They win the Super Bowl. But every coach in the NFL, most coaches in the NFL, I should say, do have the option to pick their own coordinators. And I think that's what you're seeing here, where he looked at it and said, all right, we have an opening. I just won the Super Bowl. This is the guy I want. This is the guy who I think is going to be the best for the job. So what I think of it, you know, he's an unknown. Does he have the ability to problem solve? Is this just kind of opting for familiarity more so than maybe who would be the best option if you did a search far and wide? But I also understand Sirianni wanting familiarity with the state of the franchise and the fact that, again, they did just win the Super Bowl.
Shiel, what did you make of Jalen Hurts' hesitant answer when he was asked about Kevin Petullo last week?
Well, matter of fact, if you could, Shiel, hang on a moment. Let me play the audio so everyone can hear that. Let's listen to Jalen. This is before Petullo got hired, when we all knew he maybe would get hired. And Jalen Hurts talked about Petullo. This was last week.
He said continuity, Kevin Petullo potentially could be a candidate. You know him and work with him. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that idea?
Yeah. Kevin Petullo's never been a. He'd have a different role, so it's hard to compare, you know, that role to this role because his job is going to demand something totally different of him. And I have a lot of confidence in him and what he's shown. However, I know, you know, over the years I've learned that's out of my jurisdiction, and so kind of just taking things as they come and. Trying to go out there and be the best I can be and just learn and evolve.
Shiel, what'd you make of that answer?
He had to stop himself a little bit there. Not exactly a ringing endorsement, I would say. But listen, we can read into a lot of the stuff Jalen Hurts has said over the years, and sometimes it doesn't matter. Then he goes out and he's fine, and they make it work with him and Sirianni. So I'm sure, you know, part of Hurts' wishes that he kind of had a guy that he could work with for year after year and stick with the same scheme and the same language and all that stuff. But that's just not going to be the case. You know, when your coach is not the play caller and you're a successful organization, which they've been, then you're going to have guys get poached here. And so it's someone he's worked with for four seasons. I don't know the nature of their relationship. They've obviously made it work at a high level. They've gotten to two Super Bowls here. So, it's wait and see. I hate to be wishy-washy about it, but when you hire someone who hasn't had experience and you haven't seen do it, it's just hard to know. You know, they could come in and they could be phenomenal and you weren't expecting it, or we could be sitting here in week six going, man, that was a disaster.
Yeah, look, it is very hard to know. We addressed that earlier in the show. I mean, it's just, you know, it's impossible for us to stand strong and say we know if it's going to work out, because, I mean, how can we? We don't know much about the guy. I will say this, though, Shiel. I was intrigued by the possibility, and the Eagles did not pull this lever, of the Eagles going to a 60-year-old-ish who would be unlikely to be poached as a future head coach. I don't think Frank Reich would probably get another gig, even if the Eagles won another Super Bowl. A Marty Morningwig type who, you know, you bring him in, probably never going to be a head coach again, that much like Vic Fangio, you can say, this is our guy for the next 5 to 10 years. Do you think they maybe made a mistake not trying to go down that avenue? Because we all know this. If the Eagles win the Super Bowl and the offense flourishes, then Kevin Petullo could be out the door. Do you think they should have considered perhaps more than they did that approach?
Well, you know, I think Frank Reich obviously did a phenomenal job with the Eagles in 2017 here during the Super Bowl run. But, I mean, if you look at recent years, I think we could be having a conversation saying, man, he didn't really have inspiring offenses or have a lot of great success after he left Philadelphia, in Indianapolis, in Carolina. So I don't think you want to go for that just for the fact that, hey, this guy's not going anywhere if he succeeds. I think you have to build that pipeline. You know, this is very important for these coaches who are not play callers, where it's not only about hiring the offensive coordinator, it's about the quarterback's coach and the assistants under them, because you really want to have a system where if a guy does leave, you're grooming someone to be that next guy. Now, that's easier said than done, but I do think that's more the solution they're looking for rather than finding, you know, if you could find the offensive version of Vic Fangio, that'd be fantastic. But I don't know that Frank Reich is that guy at this stage in his career.
No, that's fair. All right, Sheila, let's get to some other issues. There's a lot. Let's start with the news yesterday from an NFL standpoint about the salary cap taking a jump. If you could walk everyone through the implications as you see it for the Eagles. Obviously, it jumps for everybody. But what do you make of it from an Eagles standpoint that it went up more than expected?
Yeah, that's the key there, is that more than expected. You know, every team has their internal projections of, hey, how much is the salary cap going to go up? How much money are we going to have to spend? And not to, you know, we don't need to get into the specific numbers here, but basically the number is a lot higher than I think most teams, so maybe every team, was anticipating. So it does give you some more flexibility to work with, some more room to work with, and the Eagles probably benefit from that as much as any team in the NFL. When you look at their salary cap status and the kind of dollars they're committing to a lot of these players, specifically on the offensive side of the ball, they could use that flexibility, especially when we look at some of these players. They might look into retaining a guy like Zach Bond. They might have a little more flexibility than maybe they were anticipating.
Who? So Zach Bond, Mekhi Becton, Milton Williams, Josh Sweat. We thought maybe two could be the maximum of those guys that Howie would be able to keep. Does this news about the salary cap, does that change that number?
I don't think it changes that number. I think one is probably the most likely, and I think two would be a scenario where somebody like Josh Sweat or Mekhi Becton doesn't get the money they're looking for on the open market. You know, I think Milton Williams, just looking at this stuff yesterday, looking at the market, looking at past contracts, looking at what defensive tackles get paid, I would be pretty surprised. You know, anything can happen, but I would be pretty surprised if he were to return. Zach Bond is probably the most interesting guy to me here, because he is a very tough projection, a very tough evaluation when you look at it, and he's only had one season of stellar play. He's entering his age 29 season, and if you look at off-ball linebackers, you know, they don't get paid kind of through the roof, except for maybe the top two or three guys. And those guys are generally younger and have kind of a longer track record than Zach Bond. So it really could go either way with Bond, where we could be sitting here saying, man, the Eagles were able to bring him back at a number that was lower than people anticipated. Or we could say, hey, it only takes one team, and some team got real aggressive and saw how good this guy was last season and said, no, we are going to pay him at the very, very top of the market.
What does that even look like? What is the very top of the market for Zach? But it can't be like the 40, close to the $40 million we're talking for the edge linebacker.
Jai, I was just looking at this. So if you look at it, there are only three off-ball linebackers making more than $15 million per year. So, you know, that would be, if you're saying the very top, you're saying like $20 million per year. But I kind of think that maybe the $14 million per year range might be more likely. You know, that would make Zach Bond a top five paid linebacker in the NFL. So it's not like you're lowballing him. It's not like he's not getting what he's worth. And so that would be kind of the lower end of it. Again, when guys go to free agency, which you guys know, it's a market. All it's, you know, it takes one team. If you get two teams in a bidding war, all of a sudden we're seeing contracts that nobody expected. But, I'm not positive that that's going to be the case with Zach Bond.
Sheila Kapadia here with us. Yeah, free agency in about 2 weeks. And the combine prior to that, it's fascinating how quick this thing gets going. Sheila, let me ask you this. John and I had a similar impression of Nick Sirianni's speech at the Art Museum steps during the parade, end of the parade. And maybe this is phony baloney and we're just reading something into it that didn't exist, but we both interpret it the way he presented himself. I'll call it a little bit tepid. He wasn't over the top. He wasn't, he just was very measured as the beginning of Sirianni trying to lay a framework for next year. He didn't Doug Peterson. It's the new norm. We're the best. Like, he didn't do all that. And he followed suit with the way he's really been since early October, measured and careful. And I'm wondering if you interpret it that way as well, that it's the beginning of laying the groundwork for next season.
Yeah, it was a little muted. You know, I thought there was a chance we were going to get something big from Nick Sirianni. And, you know, he had reason to do it. You know, I touted him. I was You know, I did not think it was going to work the way it worked, and he did it. It was maybe the best back-against-the-wall season by a coach that I can remember, where you go into a season, you think, you know you have to win to avoid getting fired, and you go and you win the freaking Super Bowl. I mean, that usually does not happen. So, yeah, I thought we might get a little something different. We didn't get that. I don't know if it's laying the groundwork. I think it's more a case of kind of knowing who you work for and knowing what they're looking for and trying to, you know, be that guy. You know, Jeffrey Lurie, during the Super Bowl in New Orleans, said that Nick Sirianni's emotion is his greatest strength and his greatest weakness. Like, he was still saying that days before the team was playing in the Super Bowl. So I think Nick Sirianni knows kind of the image that the organization wants him to portray in the public, and I think maybe it had a little bit more to do with that than laying the groundwork.
Shiel, I'm just wondering, this is just a theory. TJ Paganetti, I don't know how familiar you were with him, but it feels like that was a loss. That was a coach that the Eagles probably would have liked to have kept around. He was here all the way back to Chip. He had been here basically studying under Jeff Stoutland, and now he's going away to be the Saints offensive line coach. It just feels like it really hurts. Did that, in your mind, contribute in any way to the offensive coordinator decision? That, you know, it's almost like Paganetti was the assistant run game coordinator. Now the Eagles said, hey, let's lock him up. Let's lock our assistant, let's lock the pass game coordinator up just so another one of our guys doesn't get out that door. Any validity to that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right that when a guy lasts through three different coaching staffs, that means he obviously brings value to the organization. In the NFL, that's very rare to last through, three different staffs there.
Yeah.
But I like the original. I like the OG, and that's Jeff Stoutland, and he's still there. And you might be able to put me in there and say, hey, go grab some coffee. Hey, this guy needs new cleats. And, the offensive line and the run game, I think, are still going to be pretty good. So, they're dealing with some of the issues that you deal with when the team is good, when a team wins the Super Bowl. A guy like Paganetti was not going to be able to advance his career here as long as Jeff Stoutland's still coaching. And luckily for the Eagles, Jeff Stoutland is still coaching. So I understand a guy wanting to go elsewhere to get a promotion. I think that's what happened around the league. So it's not something that, looking at it now, I'm saying, man, that's a huge concern. For next year, I think offensive coordinator, play calling, sequencing plays, coming up with answers, that to me is way more of a bigger concern. I would still expect the things that Paganetti was working on, the O-line, the run game, as long as Jeff Stoutland's in the building, I think you kind of earned the benefit of the doubt there over almost, a decade now, that those things are going to be strengths of the football team.
All right, Shiel, final thing, and I'm starting to look ahead to next year, obviously, not just who's calling the plays, but the games themselves. And we know who they'll play. We don't know the sequence. But we know the Eagles are going to play on that Thursday night to open the season. And we know it's going to be a home game. And, Shiel, I'm curious who you think they're going to play. Now, let me give you the choices. Game one of the NFL 2025 season, I'm going to throw out the Broncos and the Raiders. There's no way the NFL is going to have an AFC non-rival against the Eagles.
Not Chip Kelly's return to Philly.
No, exactly. All right, so, Shiel, here's who you got. The three division teams, and honestly, I'd throw out the Cowboys and Giants. I don't think they're considered good enough for a marquee game like that. So I really think what you're looking at are the Commanders, the Lions, very intriguing, although Fox might want to grab that game, and it could be a Fox-NBC battle for who gets Eagles-Lions. You got Commanders-Lions. I don't think it'll be the Bears. And then the Rams.
Ben Johnson thing makes it a little more possible.
A little bit, but they're just not that good. And then the Rams rematch of the Eagles' closest playoff game. Commanders-Lions, Bears-Rams, or if you want to throw the Cowboys in because it's traditional, which one is the NFL tap for game one of the season when the Eagles unfurl that banner?
The one that stood out to me when you said it is the Lions. We thought we were heading towards that game all season long. We were talking on this show every week. We were saying, hey, Eagles, Lions in the NFC Championship game. It never happened. You're talking about a high-powered offense against Vic Fangio's defense, Dan Campbell, Sirianni, emotional guys on the sideline. I think that one would certainly have a lot of juice. I think the Rams one was probably number two to me. Now, the Rams might trade Matthew Stafford. this offseason. And so we don't know, you know, who are they going to have at quarterback? If we find that out maybe before this schedule is set, I could see that one having some juice. But if the league feels like, hey, there's some uncertainty there and we might get a dud at quarterback, let's not even go near that one. Maybe that one's off the board. So, I think that the Lions are probably number one there. And Jaden Daniels and the Commanders are probably number three. I mean, you can't really go wrong with putting him in the national spotlight.
I will say this, Sheila, and I don't know quite how it works, but I know this. Fox would be ticked because it's literally the two best teams in the NFC. And if you put Eagles Lions together right away, Fox loses that game. That's, you know.
I don't think they'd put that game on week one.
I don't either.
They get to, I think Fox and CBS get to protect a few at the start of the season, don't they? Don't they get to protect a few the way it works? Like, they're allowed a choice of a few games where they're like, you cannot take this game from
That's
us.
That's what I thought.
I think it's Eagles Commanders.
Sheila, NFC South. What about NFC South teams? I mean, the Bucks, the Falcons. You know, you got some youth, some up and coming feel to
Wait,
some
what
of
about
those
them?
Teams. I don't know.
We're not playing that.
Not on the schedule. I get it, but maybe they could be competitive against the Eagles in the grand scheme of things when it's all said and done.
Here's the thing: the NFL knows is that they can put on Jaguars, Titans.
Yeah.
And guess what? Millions are going to watch.
Yep.
You're right. They get to protect some stuff. I know that happens throughout the season. I don't know how much – I don't know for week one, you know, what the conversations are like. I would think that Roger, you know, kind of gets to put his foot down and say this is going to be the opener for the entire season, and we'll get you back in week eight when you want, you know, some
you
other matchup.
Think.
Hey, Sheila, good work, buddy. Let me say this as we kind of close down the season that was, and I know we're going to be talking to you a ton, combine, free agency, the whole deal. But
you
I'll
just
say,
refuse to say goodbye to anybody.
I do. But I will say, Sheila, for the season that was, not only a big thank you to the Philadelphia Eagles for what they did for the entire Delaware Valley, but Sheila, thanks for your tremendous work on our program, man. You're as top-notch as it gets. Of course, I say that to every guest, so they can't all be as top-notch as they get, because you guys can't all be tied.
Sheil knows everything.
But Sheil, thanks, bud. You really are tremendous, and we encourage everyone to follow your work on The Ringer.
Well, listen, I'll point out that we've done this for 8 years, and in that 8-year span, the Eagles have won 2 Super Bowls and gotten to 3. So I don't
want to say
I'm WIP's Jeff Stoutland or anything, but I'm also not saying that I'm not WIP's Jeff Stoutland. So there you go.
Sheila, good work,
as always, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, pal.
Thank you, Sheila.
All right, good stuff. Sheila Kapati, that's great right there. Hey, let's get to not one, not two, but three different Twitter poll questions of the day. Brought to us by Armin Chevrolet. Do more and get more in a 2025 Armin Chevrolet Trailblazer. Starting at $23,995. Together, let's drive. See Armin's inventory at ArminChevy.com. First poll question, who should be the Phil's leadoff hitter? Three options, obviously, Schwarber, Stott, Turner. Who should it be? You can weigh in on the phone lines. Second poll question, do you think the Sixers will make the playoffs? Here's where they are right now. They are a game and a half out of the 10th spot, trailing the Bulls, who stink, but of course, Sixers stink also. If the Sixers players play, they should make it. If they don't play, they probably won't make it. Which leads to the third poll question. Third poll question, should the Sixers tank the rest of the season? And by the way, the Sixers pick, first round pick, they lose it, prior trade. They lose it unless they're in the top six of the lottery. And right now the 76ers are literally tied for the sixth worst record in basketball. I mean, it's like this thing could go either way.
Can you imagine if they tank, though, and then lose the lottery odds?
Hey, listen, very possible.
Of course. That's
very.
I said it.
Because they're not going to be the first or second worst record. I mean,
that's my point. Yeah, they're going to be playing with fire one way or another if they tank.
Oh, man.
I think they're tied with the Nets, who, of course, stink. They all stink.
Everything stinks.
Sixers stink.
Paul George scores 2 points before the All-Star game, and then we see his vacation pictures. It really makes me feel sick inside.
Ruben Amaro, sir. Joel Embiid. Does he play tonight?
I can't. It's hard for me to
Ruben's like, I got no idea.
Well, no
brother.
One knows. I mean, I'm joking when I come because Ruben, none of us know. No one knows.
It's a little embarrassing.
He should be so rested. He should be so ready,
shouldn't he?
Sixers, Celtics.
There's something obviously.
Get
wrong.
Excited.
There should be no question that he has been able to sort of like recuperate. Over the last few days,
It hurts my heart when you have two really great players, I think, at the top of this lineup, and they just don't play.
They don't play. And then when Paul George plays, he's just no good. He's not.
He's cooked.
He's not good.
I think he's cooked.
He might not be one of the 50 best players in the league.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, like he's way, 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 way down there at this point.
That's a shame.
It is a shame.
It was a horrendous signing.
It was a disaster.
Yeah.
It was a disaster. All right, so you can weigh in on all these poll questions, not only at Sports Radio WIP on Twitter, but also on the phone lines. Main thing today, obviously, has been the Eagles' move to Kevin Petullo as the offensive coordinator. We'll play coming up shortly here some audio of Petullo in recent weeks talking about what he did in his prior role. Sirianni, pretty strong endorsement from Nick Sirianni about Kevin Petullo. The audio we have not after he was hired, but a week or so ago, what Sirianni said about him. All right, all of that on the table. So too is Mary in Mayfair right now. Mary, how you been, buddy?
I'm hanging in.
Good. You know, Mary, I'm expecting some kind of Dodgers comment and trivia question from you, because that's normally what you do, Mary.
Well, I don't do much trivia, but I got to take you down a couple notches.
Oh, no, dude. Hold on.
That's right, Mary.
But, you know, you're a little full of yourself.
Well, Mary.
The Dodgers coming.
My man? Me!
Yeah, well, we'll see. And we'll throw it in. Who won the first World Cup?
Who won the first World Cup?
Brazil.
Yeah. I would guess Brazil.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Argentina.
Okay. Guys, well, you don't have to help him. He's on his own. It was Uruguay.
Of course.
Yeah.
I knew that.
They were always very strong in the midfield, especially 100 years ago. Very strong. Yeah. Very strong.
Don't matter.
Athletic.
I don't think it was 100 years ago for the first World Cup.
They were a force.
You get back.
That's your way of knocking me down a peg? You asked me a World Cup question from 100 years ago?
It doesn't matter. You're supposed to be the master of all trivia.
I'm a master, all right, but not of that.
Yeah, well, I know that.
Hey, now.
I know that. Now, who wants the most triples?
How do you know that?
Now, this one you might get.
Mm.
Who has the most triples in the league history?
All right, the most triples ever. Ruben, that's a good question. So here are the choices. Ty Cobb would be up there. Ricky would be up there. They both played a million years. I'd say Ty Cobb.
Oh, I shit you right out.
Sam Crawford.
Sam Crawford. There you go.
Was he a Philly?
That's
Sam Crawford?
Wahoo Sam Crawford, right?
Murray and the Dodgers lead again. We're the champs.
All right. Listen, Mary.
Lance Johnson did lead in triples
a bunch of years ago.
No, I know. I was joking, obviously. I was joking.
All right, Mary, give me an answer, my man. You can win the tickets to Dave Matthews.
I don't want to win. I want you to give it to somebody else. But, I'll give you an answer. Yeah. I'm not much for these questions, but I want you to give the tickets to somebody else.
All right, give me a replacement. We'll see if we give it to someone else so you get the right answer. Who's the best replacement ever? Notable, good or bad? Notable replacement.
Okay. I got one. A good one. Johnny Carson for Jack Parr.
That's a big one. There's no question. I thought of that earlier. There's multiple Tonight Show replacements. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get to JP in Plymouth Meeting. JP, good morning.
Hey, guys. How's it going? It's always a pleasure. Hope you're having a great week. Happy President's Day. Hope you had a great time at the parade, everything.
He covered it all.
I think
right out the gates.
I think the Eagles, I'm intrigued by it. I wish they would have maybe interviewed some more candidates, but they just won the Super Bowl. So let them have this. Let them have this pick, with Petullo. And, who knows? I think the leadoff for the Phillies, I want to say Schwarber, but, that works during the season, but it doesn't seem to work during the playoffs.
Yeah, but it's not JP, it's not why they lost. Like, Hoffman and Strom and Kirkring and trade guy. What was that guy's name?
Estevez.
Okay. They all stunk in the postseason. Plus, JT literally didn't have a hit. Stott didn't hit. Turner didn't hit. So, and Rojas was a given. He wasn't going to hit. And Austin Hayes didn't hit. So how this thing goes on, it's Kyle Schwarber's fault or it's the manager's fault for having Schwarber bat leadoff. I don't subscribe to that at all. I mean, JP, help me make sense of that. I just gave you like 12 Phillies, and Nola had a bad start. I just gave you like 12 Phillies that didn't do their job in the postseason well. How is that they had the wrong guy leading off?
Yeah, you're right. I'm wrong. Yeah, you're right.
That was a quick turnaround. Yeah. Damn. JP was just like, you're right. I'm out.
And JP, I want to say this because I want to be very clear. If Trey Turner was back to playing great, I would be intrigued for Trey Turner to be the leadoff hitter. But I don't want my, I'll just pick out a number, John, my sixth best hitter to get the most at-bats.
Right.
Like, he has to be back to being a star for me to say, yeah, I want him to bat more than anybody else on the team.
Right. That makes sense.
And if he achieves that, then cool.
But he will.
I don't know, Ruben.
What makes you say that, Ruben? He's been decreasing as a player three straight years. He just turned 30. Like, this is what happens to players.
Yeah, what gives you that confidence?
Because I've seen him play for a long, long time. I do believe that he will make the appropriate adjustments. I think that Kyle Schwarber, what he did last year, I think that'll help sort of catapult the fact that he's going to have to make some adjustments with his swing decisions. I know that the quotes that he had were not the best quotes.
They were the worst, Ruben.
They were not the best.
They were the worst. He was
when he went in,
he was like, I know that I'm supposed to not swing, but when I get in the batter box, you know what?
That was bad.
Can't really control it. I got no control.
I thought
they were the worst.
I think he's cognizant of it, but I do think he'll make the adjustments. He's that good of a – he's a really good player. He's a MVP-type player.
He's hiding
not anymore, though.
Yeah,
Ruben, he hasn't been in a couple years, man.
His numbers have decreased. Drastically for the last 3 years.
His second half of 2 years ago and his first half of last year were extraordinary. If you extrapolate the numbers, they were better than everybody's. He had MVP-type numbers. So let's not jump off the wagon. This man can really play offensively, and I think he's going to be just fine.
All right, JP, I need a notable replacement in honor of Petullo as the new offensive coordinator. Who's the replacement? Good or bad through the years? JP, give me an answer, my man.
Keanu Reeves in the replacements with his
Shane Falco. Love it.
That's a good one. Rhea, who should lead off?
It should be Trey, but I don't trust him. That's the problem.
So then who?
I would go back to Schwarber. I just would.
Even though you weren't into it initially, you trust him enough and you trust him more than the others.
Kind of won me over a little bit.
Me too.
I mean, it just did. It's not that I don't trust him on the base pass. I don't trust him to hit. I don't trust him to make the right decisions on when to run. You know, you need that and it's worked with Schwarber. I have come to accept it.
Yeah.
Do we have an issue, Ruben, with the running? What is the issue with stealing while someone is at the plate? Like, I hear this discussed about running. Certain guys like it. Certain guys don't like it when guys are stealing.
Yeah, I think part of it is a protection issue. I think, honestly, that, you know, if you run in front of Harper and now you have the base open at first base, you're looking at a situation where you're probably going to walk the guy in a tight spot. If you have great protection for Harper.
Especially if there's two outs and you're closer to the end of the inning.
If you have great protection for Harper, then it makes it very different. And I think that's one of the reasons why you're seeing an adjustment and why you may be seeing Schwarber back-to-back, because I'm not sure that, you know, Topper's feeling like they have enough protection for Harper so that they can run in front of them.
Yeah.
And that's going to change the dynamic of the lineup.
And I'll say this, John, there's other elements also, meaning is the second baseman moving over for the tag? Do I have a left-handed hitter who can hit through there? Does the batter like, because some batters don't like when a runner is trying to steal during their at-bat because they want to focus on their at-bat.
Well, that's what I'm suggesting.
There's
if
all that
Bryce
stuff
Harper
implied.
Has an issue with anyone trying to steal in front of him, like maybe it becomes less of an important factor who's in front of him, as crazy as that sounds.
No, I understand. It's
a limiting factor. If like, how do you talk Bryce Harper into being open to guys stealing while he's up at the plate?
Yeah, I don't know how he feels about that. I've never had that conversation.
I don't either.
And hopefully it doesn't bother him at all. But but I think it's more about the protection of being able to allow that guy to hit the way he wants to hit and have the ability to do that because... Yeah. You have to have the protection behind him.